This is Chapter a Day. I'm Michelle Good, and I'm reading from Lady Cop Makes Trouble by Amy Stewart, published by Mariner Books in 2017. When we left off, Sheriff Heath is doing everything he can to track down Baron von Mathiasis, a fugitive who escaped while under Constance's watch. But in spite of capturing the Baron's brother Felix, they're still no closer to locating the Baron himself. Then, while spending an evening at home for once with Florette and Norma, Norma points out that there's one person that no one has spoken to yet, the minister, the criminal who performed the wedding between the Baron and one of his sedated victims. Chapter 11 of Lady Cop Makes Trouble. The German Reformed Church was a small, whitewashed building of a style that was common 150 years ago. It was clad in clapboard that ran from the earth to the heavens, and from its roof arose a spire topped with old copper streaked in verdigris. Around the sides were the kind of tall, skinny Gothic windows that encourage those inside to look inward, not out onto the world. The church sat proudly atop a plain carpet of lawn with not so much as a shrub or flower box to suggest that there were pleasures to be had in this life. The only advantage to the secluded upbringing my mother imposed upon us was that we had managed to avoid spending our Sundays in such strict, austere places as the German churches of Brooklyn and northern New Jersey. It had taken us just a few days to find Reverend Weber. He hadn't testified during the trial due to an illness. The sham marriage he performed had been witnessed by several people and the certificate signed properly, which meant that there was little doubt or controversy over his role in the matter. Because of this, his name didn't appear in any of the records of the trial, and it took quite a bit of digging through the prosecutor's notes to find it. As soon as we did, we went directly there. Sheriff Heath pushed open the heavy doors of the church. We leaned in and squinted at the dark and oiled pews, only long enough to see that there was no one inside. A footpath led around back to the rectory, where my knock was answered by a frail old man so bent over with rheumatism that he had to contort himself to look up at me.
"Guten Tag," he said.
"Einen guten Tag auch Ihnen," I answered. "Mein Name ist Constance Kopp und mein Begleiter ist Herr Heath. May we come in? I'm here about a member of your congregation." That must have been enough German to satisfy him, because he nodded and opened the door. We stepped into a small, shabby sitting room meant more for the accommodation of visitors than for the comfort of the rectory's inhabitant. Reverend Weber settled into his chair, and Sheriff Heath and I sat down across from him.
"We're looking for a man you might know," Sheriff Heath said. "He's gone missing, and we very much hope you can help us find him."
"Oh, dear," the old man said. "Missing?"
"It's more that he's in hiding. He escaped while under guard at the hospital 2 weeks ago. I'm speaking of Dr. von Mathiasis."
His mouth dropped open and his chin wavered. I could tell he was working on a response, and I didn't want to give him too much time to think. "Reverend, it's dangerous for all of us if an escaped prisoner is on the loose. The sheriff has deputies out looking every day. They're armed and ready to shoot if they have to. Someone could get hurt, someone who has nothing to do with it. You don't want that to happen, do you?" He looked down at his swollen and twisted knuckles. He shook his head and said,
"I'm afraid I couldn't help you."
"You'd be helping Dr. von Mathiasis," the sheriff said. "We've already arrested his brother, who we believe was helping to keep him. Now he has nowhere to turn."
"Felix is in jail? Is someone going to take his things?"
Sheriff and I glanced at each other, puzzled, and then he said,
"Yes, we've come in my wagon, and we can take his things this afternoon."
The old man waved in the direction of a door just behind him. The sheriff and I stood up and went over there together, both of us trying to act as if nothing were out of the ordinary. The door opened into a little dark and windowless room, too small to be a bedroom, filled to the ceiling with small pieces of furniture, wooden crates, a few trunks and suitcases, and paintings in heavy carved frames. Reverend Weber hadn't risen from his chair, but he twisted himself around and watched us.
He said he'd have most of it sold by now. It's taken too long. People don't want those old things.
Sheriff Heath rubbed the back of his neck and took a long breath.
This must have come out of the sanitarium. I suppose Felix was raising money for his brother.
What's that?
The Reverend called. Sheriff Heath went back to the little circle of chairs and knelt down in front of the old man so he wouldn't have to strain his neck to look up.
Reverend Weber, these things don't belong to Felix. Some of them could have been stolen or taken from people under fraudulent pretenses. If we find that Felix has broken any laws by selling them, and I think we will, you could be charged for helping him. Do you understand?
The sheriff sat back on his heels while Reverend Weber whispered to himself. His lips worked furiously, but no sound came out. He had a cane in his hand, and it wobbled under his grip. I sat down next to him and took his other hand in mine.
Haben Sie eine Ahnung, wo sich versteckt?
He shook his head.
Nein.
Sheriff Heath looked up at me. He says he has no idea where he's hiding, I said. The sheriff looked back and forth between the two of us for a minute, his arms folded across his chest. Then he stood and wiped the dust briskly off his trousers.
Reverend, here's what you're going to do for us. Write a letter by way of general delivery addressed to Dr. von Matthäus and tell him that the rest of his things have been sold and you have money for him. It's all you have to do. Now, for your willingness to help us capture a dangerous fugitive, we'll make sure that no charges are brought up against you.
Reverend Weber craned his neck up at us, then shrugged with the helpless air of a man who'd been outmaneuvered. The sheriff looked around the room for writing paper. The old man pointed a shaky finger to a desk in the corner. I didn't think he'd be able to manage a pen and paper, but he wrote in a surprisingly bold and clear hand, and before long, we had three letters to send.
Good work, Reverend. Sheriff Heath shook his hand and spent a few minutes running back and forth, carting von Matthäus's things to his auto. I'll send a deputy for the rest, he called, and we rode off.
I couldn't remember the last time I'd seen him so exhilarated. What makes you think he'll inquire about general delivery? I asked.
Oh, every kind of clandestine correspondence is sent that way now, Sheriff Heath said. You can pick up more criminals at a general delivery window than you can at a 10-cent flophouse. We'll get 'em.
We drove directly to the post office in Hackensack, where Sheriff Heath and I walked past the lines of people standing at the windows and down a little hall off to the side. At the end was the postmaster's office. The sheriff walked in without knocking. We were greeted by the soles of a man's shoes propped up on his desk and the rest of him concealed behind a newspaper. A mess of curly black hair appeared above the paper, followed by intelligent gray eyes and a shout of,
"Bob, what you got for me?"
"May I first introduce you to Miss Kopp?" the sheriff said, as the postmaster scrambled to his feet. "She's the jail matron, and she's working on a case with me."
"You are?"
he looked at me with genuine interest.
"How'd you manage a job like that?"
"She earned it," Sheriff Heath said. Then he turned to me. "This is Mr. Fulton."
"How do you do?"
He dropped his newspaper and shook my hand.
"Better all the time.
Mr. Fulton is the father of four very troublesome girls," the sheriff said, with only the slightest trace of a smile. I'm sure they'd be shocked to hear themselves described that way by the sheriff. Oh, they know they're troublesome girls, but no one's bothered to tell them that they're girls. Our eldest goes out hunting with her uncle, and the two twins want to play baseball. Youngest is convinced she'll be a doctor and spends all her time bandaging the others. We had to stop her before she turned the kitchen into a surgery and strapped her sister to the table. Not one of them is going to marry if they don't settle down.
He made a face of mock horror that he couldn't sustain. Already I liked Mr. Fulton very much. Sheriff Heath gave a polite little cough. Mr. Fulton said,
I'm sorry. You got business, Sheriff. What is it?
We showed him the letters, which were already sealed and addressed by Reverend Weber's hand. Sheriff Heath told him very little about the case, only that we were trying to catch a man and needed the clerks at the windows to watch for him. Mr. Fulton nodded and turned the letters over in his hands.
One for us, one for Patterson, one from Manhattan. I'll get them out today.
You've done this before? I asked. Tried to trap a man like this? I hadn't any idea that general delivery was used so often by criminals and fugitives. Mr. Fulton's eyes widened.
Oh, you wouldn't believe what people get up to by mail. Now they ask for identification and keep lists of everyone who picks up their mail at the general delivery window.
I suppose that's reasonable, I said, although I wasn't sure it was.
Well, we do what we can, and we keep a sharp eye out for anyone the sheriff is looking for. Hold them if we have to.
That's fine, Sheriff, he said. We've got to catch this one.
Mr. Fulton looked at the envelopes again.
Is this the fellow who ran out on you at the hospital?
That's him.
Who's the damn fool who let him get away?
The only thing that matters is getting him back.
If you can be bothered to think about your other duties, Miss Cop, the sheriff said as we drove back to the jail, then I wonder if you would turn your attention to Mrs. Manafo.
As long as the female inmates are locked up, I don't see how they take priority over Von Mathiasis. I was wound up over those letters and couldn't think about anything else.
Providencia Manafo won't be locked up much longer, Sheriff Heath said. Detective Cordier is working on an order for her release. If it weren't for the carelessness and ineptitude of the court clerks, he'd have it by now.
But I'm sure she's telling the truth. Of course she was aiming at her husband. It makes perfect sense. Is he going to charge someone else with the crime?
He's working on it. Husband's a likely candidate, as are just about any of the boarders who can't account for their whereabouts at the time of the shooting.
I wouldn't mind seeing that husband of hers in jail, but not for a crime he didn't commit. We had to slow down for a line of school children crossing the street hand in hand, all in identical Mackinac coats. Sheriff Heath drummed on the steering wheel while we waited.
I've had plenty of inmates plead their innocence and beg for their release, but this is the first one who wants to be found guilty. Still, Mr. Cordier can't ignore those witnesses. They could go to the papers and claim he disregarded their testimony, and he knows that.
The children crossed the road, and we drove on. It was clear to me that Sheriff Heath hadn't any idea what to do about Mrs. Manafo. I also couldn't trust Detective Cordier to run any sort of competent investigation into the question of why her account was so at odds with that of the witnesses. Henri Lamont would tell me to start over at the beginning. We're not far from the boarding house, I said. Let's have another look. In a few minutes, we were back in Garfield. We parked on Malcolm across the street from the house and, finding the door unlocked, slipped inside and crept down the stairs to the Manafo's basement apartment. No answer came to the sheriff's knock, so he gave the door a push with the shoulder and it fell open. The flat was, if anything, more squalid than the last time we'd seen it. I would not have believed that Mrs. Manafo exerted any sort of beautifying influence over her surroundings, but in her absence, the place had disintegrated such that it had more in common with a lean-to under a bridge occupied by hobos than a landlady's flat. We heard, or rather felt, footsteps on the stairs above us and froze.
"I'll go see who it is," the sheriff said. "I don't know who's been interviewed in this building. Look around and see if you can find anything Cordier might have missed. Letters or..." He mumbled the rest as he ran up the stairs.
I examined every corner of the apartment, but found no letters and no places where a letter would be kept, even if one were to arrive. There was no desk, no bookshelf, and no place for a pen or paper. They hadn't a lamp to read by, nor a chair to sit on. There were only piles of filthy clothes beyond mending, soiled dishes beyond washing, and furnishings too broken and moth-eaten to use. There was not, in fact, anything in the whole place that shouldn't have been taken outside and burned. I saw nothing that contradicted what we knew so far. Footsteps struck back down the stairs, and Sheriff Heath's face appeared in the doorway.
"Didn't you hear me?" he called out.
"No, when?"
"I yelled down twice for you to come up and help me with these fellows. They only spoke Italian, and I wanted to question them before they drove off."
"I was right here, but I don't speak Italian anyway."
"Well, can't you get by with French or pick up some words?"
"Are you asking me to learn a fourth language so I might be of better service to the sheriff's department?"
"That'd be fine, Miss Cop."
There was nothing to do but wait for a response to Reverend Weber's letter. Every day I awoke with a weight on my chest. I was starting to grind my teeth together and my jaw ached from it. I begged the sheriff to send me out on patrol with the other deputies, but he refused.
"Oh, there's not much point in having them out marching around to train stations and hotels," he said. "Von Mathesis doesn't want to be seen. We're not just going to stumble across them on the street. It's a waste of their time, and it would be a waste of yours, too. But we haven't any other leads, so I keep them at it."
What he didn't say was that he had to keep up the appearance of a vigorous investigation because he was being investigated himself. The patrols were nothing but a bit of theater and a way to stall for time. I wouldn't have known that the inquest had begun, except that I happened to walk past the sheriff's office one afternoon in the middle of November and heard a familiar voice. It was John Ward, the attorney who had, for a short time, represented Henry Kaufman when he threatened us a year ago. The door was slightly ajar, but I didn't dare get too close once I understood what they were discussing.
"The justices in this county don't know the law. I've seen you go around and instruct them as to their own duties," Mr. Ward was saying. "It's no wonder they've no idea what to do with you. Why, you could just tell them that no such law exists and then sit back and wait 10 or 20 years while they try to look it up for themselves. You'll be retired before they get around to bringing charges against you."
"The county prosecutor has put the matter before them quite plainly," Sheriff Heath said. "It's apparent to me and to Mrs. Heath that they have their sights on putting me in jail. It's been 3 weeks and they're all ready to start the inquest. Look, I'm going to need you in the courtroom with me every day. That's not all. My bondsmen want to know how I intend to hold on to this office. Time to give them my answer. You and I'll sit down with them tomorrow."
Cordelia's voice interrupted. "My husband is protecting one particular individual in his employ at the expense of his family's safety and reputation, not to mention his own personal liberty. I believe that it would be quite possible to put up a good defense on the grounds that the guard was ill-equipped and incompetent."
"Well, that describes half the prison guards in New Jersey," John Ward said. "We need something more uncommon than shiftlessness."
"What about now?" It was Sheriff Heath's turn to interrupt his wife.
I won't allow it. The sheriff has full charge of the jail and its inmates. Whatever happens is my responsibility. I won't put it off on a guard. I've heard what you have to say on the matter, Cordelia, and I've made my decision. But Cordelia wouldn't be quieted.
How do you think it's going to look when they find out that the ladies' matron was put on guard duty, for which she was naturally incapable? I mean, if you can't show good judgment about a simple matter of posting a guard, you'll never be elected to another office in this county.
Did you say, Mr. Ward put in, but the sheriff ignored him, the lady's matron has been the only one to make an arrest in this case, making her far more competent than anyone else in my employ. And you would know that if you would just listen to the facts.
I know all I need to know, she said. You've stood by her, and the rest of us be damned. I won't tolerate the idea of a husband of mine going so willingly to a jail cell over that woman.
There was a scuffling of chairs. I backed down the hall as she slammed the door and ran back to the sheriff's apartment, little sobs burbling out of her throat as she went. Surely there was nothing special about the way Sheriff Heath was defending me. He would do the same for any of his men, no matter the consequences. He had a way of championing a noble cause, even if it worked against him. I'd seen him do it, when he argued for a jail physician, or when he had to defend the cost of a gold tooth for an inmate whose gums were so rotten that ordinary rubber teeth wouldn't hold. He insisted on uniforms for prisoners when he saw how shabby their clothes were, and he started holding church services on Sunday and organized a jail library. All of it required a fight with the Board of Freeholders, and he took up those fights eagerly, with little regard for gossip and newspapers. This was no different. But Cordelia didn't see it that way. She was too terrified to think straight. Poor woman probably got a case of the nerves the day she moved into the jail and never shook it off. She had no neighbors, nor friends that I knew about, and I'd never seen her husband show her much sympathy. With no one in her corner, it had all become too much for her. I knew what she would do behind that door. As long as her husband stayed away, and he would after that performance, she'd crawl into a closet and take to her bottle. She'd like nothing more than to see me disappear. For just a minute, I considered it. I could have left and never returned. But that wouldn't make up for what I'd done. Nothing would. But bringing Von Matthäus back. The inquest went forward, but I knew little about it. Sheriff Heath persuaded a judge to hold the proceedings behind closed doors so that the newspapers couldn't print anything that might endanger our search for Von Matthäus. He was at the courthouse most days, for a few hours at least, but never spoke about it. Finally, one morning around the 1st of December, the postmaster appeared unannounced at the jail. Sheriff Heath called me down to his office so we could both hear what he had to say. Mr. Fulton was waiting in front of the fireplace, bouncing on the balls of his feet with the air of a cat who had swallowed the canary. Sheriff Heath came down the hall from his living quarters, looking grimmer than he ever had. I didn't dare ask him what was bothering him. As soon as the sheriff was settled behind the desk, Mr. Fulton said,
"The New York police keep a man assigned to the general delivery window as a matter of practice. On any given day of the week, they have a list of a dozen or so fugitives and con men who might be expecting a letter."
What a city, eh?
"It's quite the city," the sheriff said wearily.
"Well, the way it works is that the police officer... he is in full view of the postal clerks at the window. They've rigged up a hand signal to let the officer know if any suspicious letter is being claimed. And today, someone came in for your letter."
He clasped his hands together in satisfaction. We waited in silence for the rest.
When it didn't come, I said, "You mustn't leave us in suspense, Mr. Fulton. Has our man been arrested?"
"What? Oh, no. That's what I came to tell you. He sent a messenger to get the letter. He knew better than to turn up himself. The officer chased the messenger across the street and into a subway station, but would you believe the train doors closed just as he was about to leap into the car and nab him?"
Sheriff Heath sighed and shut his eyes against the image. "I do believe it." "The officer wouldn't really have grabbed him on the street like that, would he?" I asked. "Surely he intended to follow the messenger and find out where he was taking the letter. He could have gone straight to Von Matthias's."
"Oh," said Mr. Fulton, "I suppose you're right."
"Did the messenger know he was being chased, or did he just happen to slip into the subway station ahead of the police officer?"
I didn't think to ask. I only just heard from the postmaster in New York and rushed right over. Here, I have the name of the officer. You can speak to him yourself."
He handed the sheriff a slip of paper. Sheriff Heath stared blankly at it for a moment. His head seemed to clear, and he said,
"When did this happen?"
"About a half hour ago."
"I wish you'd just telephoned. We should have had someone at the church with Reverend Weber by now."
Mr. Fulton's mouth dropped open.
"Sheriff, it took no more than—"
Sheriff Heath held up a hand to silence him and turned to me.
"Bring Deputy English down. We'll put him at the church. The letter promised money, so we have to hope someone will turn up to collect it."
When I didn't move, he said, with his eyes downed and his hands knotted together, "Please, do not be insensible to the fact that I am answering some rather difficult questions at the courthouse right now. English is the man for the job." I didn't have to guess at his meaning. This was too important a post to assign to me. I ran out of the room, my face burning. When I found Deputy English, I could barely get the words out. At some point in the middle of the afternoon, Sheriff Heath left suddenly, telling no one where he was going. A few minutes later, I knew at last what he had been worrying about. From the fifth-floor window, I saw Cordelia Heath and the children leave the residence and walk over to the courthouse, where they stood, with suitcases and hat boxes, until an auto came to the curb and took them all away. I'm Michelle Good, and I've been reading from Lady Cop Makes Trouble by Amy Stewart, published by Mariner Books in 2017. And I'll read from it again next time on Chapter a Day.